This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome to Enterprise Biz Bytes, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Rich Bradbury. It is, of course, Tech Thursday, meaning that we have Motormouth and Tech Maestro, Jeff Sander, with us here in the studio.
Mortal Mouth. Yeah.
And, yes, of course, we are joined by
Christine Wong.
And a little bit later on, we'll of course, be bringing Majida back. She made her first appearance yesterday, second appearance today, of course. Right, so stories today, then, talking about how China have a quantum computer. Mm-hmm. We're talking about how, thanks to streaming music, that China will be backing off on piracy. Then talking about KFC, which is a story that I know she's very excited
Christine's
about.
Christine's very excited.
Yeah, very excited about. Also, Majida will be talking to us about this story, Tinder for Jobs. And then we're wrapping up with Amazon and how they are moving into Southeast Asia.
Yeah, yeah. Before we talk about China, our first story Chinese quantum networking technology, Microsoft Paint, remember we mentioned about how it's going to die in the next coming days? How Microsoft has did a U-turn because of the outcry from all of us fans.
No, really?
Yeah, they have just released an update on their blog, and they said that, you know, we will offer Microsoft Paint in the Windows Store for free and continue to provide new updates and experiences to Paint 3D so people can have the best creative tools in all in one place. It's sort of a U-turn from what they initially wanted to do.
Are they offering updates for the original Paint or just for Paint 3D?
Well, they will. They said here they will be updating Paint 3D.
Reading between the lines, that's a kind of sneaky way of doing things, right, Christine?
Yeah.
Well, anyways, at least it's still alive. So Microsoft Paint will be available on the Windows Store, but, you know, it won't be part of the Windows Core itself.
Right.
It will be sort of, you know, a separate thing that you download if you want.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So then.
Yes.
China and quantum computing.
Yeah. Well, you know, the country is known for its restrictive internet policies, and China, though, they seem to be taking a lead on developing next-generation internet communications. The city of Jinan is set to become the hub for this quantum communications network that will boost the Beijing and Shanghai internet network when the project is launched by the end of August. It is set to become the world's first unhackable internet communications network. Unlike encryption methods that we use today that hide keys under different mathematical problems, quantum communication and cryptography use entanglement to do the trick.
Entanglement was something that Einstein once called a spooky action at a distance. Great title, but he also poo-pooed it and said it's a strange phenomenon that occurs when two or more particles link up and instantaneously affect each other regardless of how far apart they are.
Yes.
Okay.
So in an example, if we have one particle spin in a clockwise direction, then quantum entanglement predicts that the other particle will spin in an anti-clockwise direction, whether it's 1 centimeter away or a cosmos away.
Oh.
It's quite magical, really.
It is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So whatever is happening here is mirrored over there. And we don't know what happens in between.
Right.
That's what the Chinese are kind of backing on.
Yeah. So the key is embedded in photons or light particles. Mm. And they are sent ahead of the encrypted message. It's a method called the quantum key distribution, or QKD. Mm-hmm. Now, communications becomes unhackable this way because any attempt to intercept the key would be obvious to the sender and the intended recipient. What's more impressive is that China has the technology to extend this quantum communications up to 400 kilometers, as previously demonstrated in their quantum cryptography research in Hefei. If you send a message currently these days, you know, you want to keep it away from eavesdroppers. You know, the traditional encryption method works by hiding a key that needs to read the message in a very difficult mathematical problem, right? What difficult... The term difficult means is just that, you know, how complex the mathematical equation is, right?
And how long the computer could take to break that key down.
Exactly. So if you think you have, you know, a sort of a password that's really quick to decrypt, is because, you know, it's made of very little numerical numbers and alphabets. And
Right? Do not use 123456789910 as a password, essentially. Yeah.
And computers take really fast to crack easy passwords. Hence, you know, sometimes when you register for a password, it tells you how strong, how weak, or how good your password is. And the longer your password is, the harder it is for a computer to crack.
Yeah.
So that's in, you know, know, in today's age, 2017, if you have a very powerful computer, you can actually break into very simple passwords. Mm. Now, the steady improvements of encryption has sort of been, you know, more better, but it still has a lifespan because when, as computers catch up, it's only a matter of time where we need to expand our passwords. They become longer, they become more complicated, right? That's not what we want to do. So there are fears that, you know, quantum computing will come in and replace this, you know, current encryption model, hence the need for something that is quantum communications, right? It works completely different. So if you want to send a secure message, you first send a separate a key embedded in particles of light.
This sounds awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Only then, when you send your encrypted message and the receiver will be able to read it with the help of that light particle that has been sent beforehand. The crucial advantage of this so-called quantum key distribution is that if anyone tries to intercept the light particles, they necessarily have to... It's either been altered completely or generally
or
it just
destroyed.
Destroyed.
Right?
So you can see straight away
if
somebody's been tampering
with
it.
You can see immediately. So what this means that any attempt that will sort of, you know, try to go into the original message will just immediately, you know, just poof, gone. It's disappeared. Yeah. So the quantum communications network will be the longest in the world. It will travel about 2,000 kilometers from Beijing to Shanghai, and it will pass through the message hub in Jinan. More secure communications are needed because, you know, the current encryption methods, like I was mentioned, like it's going to render obsolete with, you know, quantum computing is coming up, right? The new Jinan network will cost about £15 million to develop, and it's capable of encrypting about 4,000 pieces of data in a second.
I mean, it's just off the back of us reading about the Chinese teleporting stuff into space.
Yeah. Yes.
This is essentially what this is for, right? Yep. They're testing this technology for, like, space communication, I guess.
Yeah, so communications between government offices within the cities as well. About, you know, 200 users spread across government, finance, military, and the electricity sector. This will basically make it the first city in the world to use a quantum communications network for its government functions.
Ah.
The Great Wall of Fire, you know, Great Firewall of China, right? In that sense, right? So the link between Beijing and Shanghai has been in testing for about 2013, but the Jinan network trials just began about 2 months ago. It's reported in the China's Xinhua news agency, the groundbreaking network has exchanged data more than 51,000 times of you know, current method and a success rate of about 99%. This includes the data that it could secure, includes, like, you know, phone calls, files, documents, as well as data from the internet, and faxes.
Oh, wow.
Huh? Faxes.
Yeah. Faxes?
Yeah.
We're talking about beaming stuff via light, talking to me about faxes?
Faxes, yeah. Because, you know, it's still important in today's day and age, especially in the military world and, you know, in communications within governments. It's still important, but those are not being encrypted. So how do you do it?
Interesting.
That's true.
And that's, you know, quantum communications network can encrypt faxes as well. So think about it. And,
all right.
Yeah, just to be clear, though, China isn't the first in the world to build a quantum communication network. They have been in operations in the US, in the Europe over the past few years, but the research, it's all more for, like, just research process projects at the moment. China is the first to sort of use this network for a practical application. Once mature, the technology will be available for almost everyone to use it, government, banks, militaries, and everyone else in between. But, you know, China just may be the first to have it for itself, which, you know, if China's doing it and, you know, once they have these communications between Beijing and Shanghai, and it's in a secure manner, what makes you think that the Americans and the Europeans and even just, you know, generally every single country in the world would look into this?
You see, this, if this thing was working currently, you know, all of these talk of Donald Trump and the Russians and hacking of, this would be a different kind of story altogether, wouldn't it?
It would be a boring life, though.
Right, right. We'd know all about it. Yeah. Anyway, going from beaming, we have to talk about streaming. Did you like that?
Very nice.
Streaming services, China's consumers have begun paying for music. Did you ever use Baidu back in the day, like 2007, 2008, 2009?
Nah, no, know about them, but never used it.
I don't know. I don't even know what it is.
Okay, so Baidu is essentially China's version of Google.
Okay.
Right? But back then, they were a little bit naughty, and you could search for any MP3, and it would arrive. You could find anything. It was just freely available. And so this is slowly changing. So over the past 5 years, digital music revenues for the recording industry, we know that they've nearly quadrupled to $195 million. Most of that amount comes from music streaming. streaming, right? Mm-hmm. So this sum might not be a huge amount for China, but they are at 7.8 billion. That's the worldwide. So not everybody is paying for money in China, but 600 million Chinese people who listen to music online, only 20 million of those have a paid subscription.
Oh,
the rest listen to stuff for free. Right, but when they do subscribe, it's between 8 and 12 yuan, which is about $1.2 to $1.8 per month to stream their services. Right. Spotify is not available there, but guess who is?
Tencent?
Of course it's Tencent, yeah. So the streaming market is dominated by Tencent.
Yeah.
Obviously, they're best known for WeChat, and according to some estimates, their market share exceeds 70%. And there's two other streaming brands, there's QQ Music and there's Kugou. They claim hundreds of millions of users, right? Mm-hmm. But the reason that they own 70% of the market share is because they paid three international record labels. They paid Warner Music, they paid Sony Music, and they paid Universal Music for a huge amount of money for exclusive rights to stream their music in China. Mm. That means Tencent gets to decide which songs rivals are allowed to play. So they've kind of got that market.
Wow.
But because of that, you know, mobile phones are ubiquitous. Everybody has a mobile phone in China. And it costs nothing now it's tied into WeChat to pay 1.2 yuan or whatever it is just to stream music. And so everybody's jumping on it. There's no, the CD stores are dying off. The DVD stores are dying off. Mm. People are actually paying for music again in China. I never thought I'd say that.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what's interesting is just the cost of entry itself, the low cost of entry for, you know, for users in China to pay for the subscription. That's really cheap.
It's really, really cheap.
I know they're working on a scale of, you know, billions of users.
Yeah.
But even then, though, you look at, you know, Spotify, they've got a large number of, you know, database as well, and a lot of paying customers, and, you know, they're not making enough in order to, you know, support the music industry. Like, there's always been a battle, right?
Yeah.
Now with this, you know, with billions of users possibly as well getting onto the streaming services, you know, will these, you know, audio houses like, you know, your Warner Music and your Sony Music, would they sort of feel itchy because you suddenly have just more billion users? But I don't think they're making much money because you're charging so low.
Just charging so little, yeah. Really? If you don't, though, the people in the Chinese market, they just won't do it. They're so used to getting stuff for free.
Unless there is a monopoly, like you said, of, you know, just dictating what goes on and what doesn't go on and, you know, managing that. And, you know, if that's the case, though, then it's not really a free internet world or a free streaming subscription. You're paying for something, you're supposed to get the entire catalog.
Right. Right.
So, it's interesting, you see. I guess we got to go to China then.
Yeah, we do. Right, we have to wrap up this break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. We are talking about KFC.
Yay!
All right, if you want to get in touch very quickly, 018-789-8899 via WhatsApp. We are on Twitter at BFM Radio. Some music coming up right here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Build fortunes modestly. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bites. My name is Rich Bradbury, joined in the studio by
Jeff Undo
and
Christine Wong.
We've had stories about China and their quantum computer services. We've had stories about China now starting to pay for streaming services. Now, there's a ubiquitous amount of KFCs in China. Huge amounts.
Wow.
They were the first fast food restaurant, Western fast food restaurant, to open up in Beijing. Mm-hmm. Now, I know, Christine.
Yes.
You have a big love for all things fried chicken.
I am a little bit obsessed with fried chicken. I just love food in general, and that's happening also.
She's even munching on them.
She's
right
munching
now
on them
well.
Right now.
I'm definitely bringing food into the studio. That's definitely not against the rules.
Right. Against company policy, but never mind. We'll move on.
Point being. So actually, I gotta give a quick shout out though to Four Fingers Crispy Chicken as well, because they actually delivered some chicken to the office today after I interviewed their CEO, Steen Pagard, for Enterprise yesterday. If you want to listen to that, you can head over to bfm.my and listen to the podcast.
And I can say on behalf of the entire studio, it is delicious.
It is a good
so
time.
Good.
Delicious.
It is a good time.
Good. Right. So good.
But moving on from that, back to the KFC kind of part of this whole thing. KFC is knocking it out of the park with the unique marketing campaigns, okay? Mm-hmm. So we covered the smartphones that they released in China.
The Zinger Burger in space.
The Zinger Burger in space happened. There was also an oversized drumstick iPhone case in Japan.
Oh,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Suntan lotion, nail polish, whatever. But now, right, this is the crowning moment. The crown jewel. incredible, this amazing development from KFC India is that KFC has launched a to-go chicken box that, wait for it, doubles as a Bluetooth game controller called the Gamer's Box 2.0, despite the fact that there doesn't seem to have been a Gamer's Box 1.0. I don't quite know what the logic of the naming.
So it's a to-go box, the normal Kentucky Fried Chicken to-go box that has now been turned into a Bluetooth game controller.
Yes.
Sign me up.
Right? It sounds like the best idea ever.
But are you not going to get greasy fingerprints all over your phone and everything?
It's all good.
Oh, it's all good.
Right. Explain.
What it looks like is, so there's the box. Uh-huh. And the left and right sides of the box feature two physical game pads complete with an analog stick, a D-pad, media keys, two trigger buttons. And there's a holder on the top of the box. Now, this is the brilliant thing about it, right? Mm-hmm. When you first get the box, that holder is, I mean, it's meant to hold your phone so that you can play the games on it. Okay. But when you first get the box, it holds a can of Mountain Dew because that's who they're partnering with for this event.
What?
Right.
Which is genius if you think about it, because Mountain Dew, as some people may know, is associated with gamer stereotypes. Mm-hmm. Once you drink the Mountain Dew, you can put your phone where the Mountain Dew used to be.
Uh-huh. Mountain Dew and Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yes. Yeah.
To have partnered up together in one takeaway package in India, of all places.
In India as well. Yeah.
Oh.
So you pair your phone with the Bluetooth controller by pressing the home and X buttons, and then you can see if it's connected by the LED indicators, and then you can play a mobile game using the controller, including Pac-Man, Temple Run, and Rush City, as long as your device is running Android version 3.2 or iOS 7.0, at least. The controllers can also be charged using a normal smartphone charger as well.
Mm.
We've seen some very strange offerings from these fast food
restaurants.
Strange, right?
Yes, but I really like this Gamer Box 2.0.
Of course you do.
Well, no, not just because I'm a gamer, right? But I think just the fact that if you were to buy something from a fast food restaurant and you were to get something that you could go back home and build something from it and then use it for a practical purpose, even if it's just for a day,
right?
That's still something.
Yeah. Right.
I don't see many brands here. At least you see even like, you know, KFC in India is doing this. Like, I would love to see these kind of things happen here. Mm. Look at McDonald's just across our office, right? Look at the amount of people that are just lining up whenever they launch like a new Happy Meal or like a new toy. Imagine if there is something else within the packaging itself that you know, if you were to design something, you could build as part of your toy.
I mean,
some things like those would nice.
Yeah. This is literally out of the box thinking, okay? Mm. So like, but there is a catch, as there always
is. Do you write your puns before you come in the studio, or do you just wait?
I think she just waits.
I just wait. It's my pun instinct coming in. But my point is, there's always a catch, as there was a catch with the smartphones in China, as there's a catch with the suntan lotion. There are only a grand total of 10 units.
10? Only 10?
For the whole world.
Do they know how many people in India?
They only made 10? They only made 10. And they're being advertised across Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter with the kind of idea of tag your gamer obsessed friend and we might send them this box.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually kind of funny because they're also, it's really playing into a lot of, their marketing is really good for it because they have a little video that comes with it and it just says something like, remember when you used to be told not to play with your food? Well, now you can.
Oh,
that's pretty cool though.
Which I think is just so smart. But as thrilled as I am about this, first of all, it's so limited. And like you said, it is actually kind of a utility in a way. Yeah. You can use it for more stuff. But also, another point is that the bulkiness of the fact that it's a massive box that you used to hold fried chicken kind of takes away from the whole point of mobile gaming, which is, you know, portability and convenience. Like, you can just hold your phone and play the game on your phone.
Yeah, but I think if they do this in a mass scale, it'll be nice to just chill out in KFC's restaurant itself. Yeah.
McDonald's did something not too long ago where you paired the your tray, the little piece of paper that comes on your tray, acted as a DJ little booth. So you put your phone in the middle, and it would play songs, and you could add, and you could beat match, and you could mix, and that was pretty cool.
Okay.
And they did that mass in certain portions of the world. You could take that home, obviously. But something like this, I'm guessing with it having Bluetooth in it and a little joypad and whatever, they're going to be expensive, right? So they can't really produce them.
But 10
en masse.
In India, 10.
I know.
10,
yeah,
really?
I know,
at least 100 or
none
something.
None of my connections would be able able to help me out here. It's 10 in India. Come on.
I know.
And the other thing as well is that we're not sure if it actually connects to any other kind of device. Like, we don't know if it might work with an Xbox or PlayStation or anything. It's just for mobile games.
Ah, right.
So that might
That's
be
fine.
Another catch as
Still
well.
Happy with
it,
it
is very cool, though.
Very I'm
cool.
very thrilled about this
we
and
do
I really
like
want
this.
One. If okay. you have access, send it to me, please.
Can we just get some more chewing crispy chicken just before we take this little break? Can we play that again? Because this is what it sounds like. It's important. There we go. Right. We're going to be right back.
Crunchy goodness.
In just a second. We'll be right back after these messages. When we come back, of course, Majida will be joining us in the studio, where she's talking to us about the Australian Tinder for Jobs. Yep, you heard that right. We'll be right back after these messages here on Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Business, finance, and more. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Rich Bradbury. I'm joined in the studio by
Jeff Sandu
and
Christine Wong
and
Majida Hashim.
Hey, hello. Well, it's a full house today. Woo. We've got DJ Arvin on the decks. We've got Audrey Raj in the back. Frida's off somewhere else.
Having fried chicken.
Probably. That was a lot.
Anyway, gang, we've spoke about quantum computing. We spoke about streaming services. We've spoken about chicken. Now, of course, what else do we do? We talk about Tinder, right?
Yes.
But slightly different, Majida. Tell me all about this.
So a Sydney-based software startup, which claims itself to be the Tinder for jobs, has just secured $1.9 million in new capital. Found Careers, also known as Found, received $2.5 million investment in March from the likes of MYOB Chief Executive Tim Reid and DME founder Stephen Premutico, who joined the board of the startup. The same investors are involved in the latest capital raising, which takes the total investment up to $4.4 million. For the year.
So what's the idea behind this then? Obviously, do you swipe left? Do you swipe right? How do you get a job?
How does it work? A Tinder for jobs?
Yeah, exactly. So it works exactly like how Tinder works. So employers go in, they create a Tinder profile for their company. And they put in what kind of jobs that they have, what kind of company they are, and what kind of skills they're looking for, what the hours are like. So, for example, if you're looking for a barista and you want one that can create cute coffee designs, one that can work in the weekend shift, and someone who has to start immediately, it gets posted up and the app goes on to match profiles of potential job seekers. This exactly the same way Tinder does, which it's match compatibility.
It's quite clever, really, when you think about it.
Yeah. And just like Tinder, when the employers get a match, they can open up a chat box and immediately start chatting with the potential candidates.
You see, what's annoying, Jeff, is that I was speaking to Frida on Monday about this, and I said, wouldn't it be nice if there were a Tinder for jobs?
Here we go.
And you know what she said to me? She said, your ideas, Richard, you've got plenty of. It's the execution you have problems with.
Ooh.
And I was like,
You know what? Actually, interestingly, I'm just looking up on, you know, Tinder for jobs, and the one in Australia, it's actually not the first.
Is it
not?
Yeah, there's actually been a few,
right?
But may not have reached the success that, you know,
these guys have gotten.
But this is my question, though. If the employers are creating the profiles for people to swipe through, does that mean that there's like one version of the app for employers, one version of the app for employees? Like, how does that work? Or not employees, applicants, I mean.
Good question.
It goes exactly the same way Tinder does. So you have an employer version, and a job seeker will go on and create their own personal profile, and what kind of skill sets they have, what they like to do, when is their availability and all, and they just get matched on the compatibility mode.
I suppose
when you log in, maybe you might have to select like, oh, are you an employer or are you an applicant, and then you can choose how to go from there, I suppose.
I don't know. I mean, I don't think this would fly in the UK, though, to be honest. And the reason I say that is because of employment law in the UK is very different. You can't say we want a female barrister who's between this age and that age. You're just not allowed to do that anymore.
Yeah, you know, so I guess it works in markets that has set, like, you know, a certain number of female employees or employees that are, you know, are certain, you know, different qualifications that you can really specify. Because the Australian Defence Force is one of the customers using Found to recruit more women into traditionally male roles. To help the army fulfill its target of 15% female participation by 2023. So they are using, you know, services like these because they have sort of like a set target to meet. Yep. And, you know, once you have these curated styles, it's a bit easier to, you know, sift through what's, you know, good and what's bad, I guess. Yeah.
I guess with this kind of technology, it's kind of interesting because you can use it for kind of either way. You can either use it to make your searches more streamlined, or you can use it to diversify your workforce as well. But it really depends on what you're looking for as well, like Jeff's mentioned.
I mean, there's one thing I found really interesting. It said they were established in 2015. They claim they have 300,000 job applications, and they are processed through this no resume, no cover letter, and no email system each month. And employers like the Sheraton, McDonald's, Winsor Smith, and Domino's have been using it to search for their staff. You know, the idea of no resume, no cover letter, no email, without kind of pointing fingers at an entire generation. Millennials, I'm speaking about you. You know, this
sorry.
Is what that's what I said without pointing fingers. But this is what it feels like. It feels like we can't be bothered to fill in our full details. We can't be bothered to write a cover letter. You know, and I don't know how to do a CV. Therefore, I'll swipe left or I'll swipe right, and I don't know. I mean, is it just me being old-fashioned, Christine?
I mean, for me, this is the thing. This is the thing, right? I've actually used a similar, not exactly like a Tinder for Jobs, but I've used a similar app when I was in the UK,
right.
And it's called Debut, and it's quite a new startup. And basically what they do is you fill out a profile. So not a CV, but kind of a CV,
right.
Like a shorthand version, and then the employers find you. So it's a database of people that they can find, which and then they will contact you instead of you contacting them, which I thought was very useful because it's really difficult for us. I think we don't get a lot of education about we're not giving any hints. Basically, we get out of we graduate university and then we have no idea where to go from there. So it's not that we don't want to send cover letters and resumes and such, like it's just that we don't know how. So having apps like this, I think actually
they didn't teach you in school.
It's not about teaching or anything, but there's no indication of any sort of preparation for what happens next.
Right.
Basically, nowadays I feel that a lot of academia is focused on academia itself, and it doesn't really prepare you for having a career. Like the degree that I did has very little to do with, you know, my current position. So
mine too.
Right. So I think it's one of those things where, you know, it is actually quite useful to be able to, you know, formulate and change the way that people start to apply for jobs in this current age, because everything is changing.
That's a very polite way of saying, yes, Richard, you're old-fashioned.
Hey, no, but Google as well is also changing the way we look for jobs, right? So they're also trying to look out for, you know, new ways that employers can find stuff, because talent is a problem, not just, you know,
absolutely.
It's everywhere else.
Yeah, but I guess it depends on what kind of job you're looking for, because some employers do evaluate a candidate by how good they write a cover letter,
right.
How they design their resumes. So I guess it works for some jobs, but not all. I guess if you are looking for a specific kind of model, maybe, then you can specify.
The entertainment industry may work
this
well.
Tall and things like that. So that works that way. I mean, it makes things very simple, the way Tinder does. You go in and you want a person who is this tall, or a person who is a vegetarian or something. So it makes... It takes all the technicalities out of the way.
Well, I guess if you see, like, you know, Sheraton, McDonald's and Domino's, they're using this for searching for staff. You kind of know, you know, they're looking for front desk staff, right? For people who
service
can...
Personnel.
Yeah, service personnel who can front the, you know, the cashier, can actually work in the kitchen, can also deliver. Because those are the people where you want, you know, there isn't like a specific skill. It's just more of you're passionate, you're interested, and you're hungry, right? Literally hungry because you're working for
Domino's. We got it.
Okay, so, you know, because of all that, it's very simple to, you know, draft up a criteria list.
Yeah.
And if you have platforms like this, it just makes it a lot easier.
So, could this then work or be like a stopgap between employment agencies? Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So you get what the Adecco, I think, was a big employment agency for a while, where you get people who literally just wanted to do those jobs, Jeff, those front desk jobs, those working in service and retail. This is very useful for that kind of job, like you were saying there.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's something that you're looking for a career. I don't know.
Well, for those who are listening to BFM right now, actually, we have a position that's open. Our internship program is up again for enterprise. So for those of you who are listening and you think you may want to try out something new, we are actually looking for an intern from sometime around August till, you know, for about 3 months at least. And if you are keen, or if you know anyone who's keen to join our, you know, awesome team, especially when you want to be a part of Enterprise Biz Bites with Richard Bradbury, the old-fashioned guru, and learn the tricks and trades about radio, all you have to do is actually just drop us an email. It's enterprise@bfm.my. But with the subject line that says best for minions. And if you do that, that's a higher chance of you getting through, because that's what we will look out for. We want a detail-oriented intern. So
I will say this, we cannot promise you free fried chicken, and I'm sorry.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah. Best for minions is the subject title, enterprise@bfm.my. If right. you're looking for an internship.
We do like cover letters and we do like CVs, just out of interest. Right, okay, it's time for us to wrap up this segment. When we come back, we will be talking about Amazon in Asia. Yeah, I like that. Amazon in Asia. Yeah.
Nice. All
right, anyway. It is, right? Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to Enterprise Biz Bytes here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Brewing financial minds. BFM 89.9.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. It's almost time for us to wrap up the show. Before we do that, of course, we've got one more story. We'll get to that in a second, though. Quickly, Jeff Sandler is with us in the studio with
Christine Wong
and
Majida Hashim.
And of course, I'm Richard Bradbury. Stories we've done so
far.
Why
didn't I get like a.
I said Jeff Sandler was in the story.
The motorboat make noise.
Motor mouth, friend. I introduced you, you see.
Okay, thank you.
Jeff started us off with China Quantum Computing, and then we moved on to streaming services in China. Christine then talked about KFC's Bluetooth video game controller.
Love it.
Yeah,
we had Tinder for jobs, and now we have the Amazon in Asia.
Yeah, so they're kicking off in Singapore with its most aggressive service yet. It's offering the Prime Now 2-hour delivery service on everything from, you know, like a chilled drink all the way to like mobile phones and home devices. So customers in Singapore can now shop using the Prime Now app and get tens of thousands of items delivered to their door with free delivery on orders more than 40 Singapore dollars, according to Henry Lau. He's the director of Amazon Prime Now in Asia Pacific. Amazon's entry to Southeast Asia could be the first of, you know, like that spark like real competition between Alibaba Group, mm-hmm. because they've obviously, you know, acquired Lazada, and they've also said to be considering an investment in Indonesia's Tokopedia.
Yeah.
The region of, you know, 620 million people is home to an e-commerce market that's forecast to reach $88 billion by 2025. This is according to Google and Temasek Holdings report.
This is going to be really interesting, because mm-hmm. Singapore is like that one place where there's a real mix of East meets West.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And you've got Tencent and you've got Alibaba coming from one side. You've got Amazon, who've got a huge amount of money coming from the other side. Mm-hmm. It's a clash of the titans, isn't it?
Yeah, so
it
they've been stepping up, the US e-commerce giant, they've been stepping up on its overseas expansion.
Massively.
Yeah, so, you know, having largely sort of been seeded by China from Alibaba, the Seattle-based firm is waging war now with Flipkart online services in India, where it has pledged to spend more than $5 billion within the next few years. And in March, Amazon agreed to buy Dubai-based online retailer Souq.com. So they are now expanding, and Southeast Asia is a no-brainer, right?
We've absolute got no-brainer.
Yeah.
So many people just doing online shopping.
Mm-hmm. Go on, Christine, you have something?
No, honestly, I was about to say that I actually really miss Amazon, because when I was in the UK, I used it quite a lot for a lot of things, and I had a student Amazon Prime. So it was really convenient and really easy. But this is my question. It's in Singapore. When is it coming here?
That was going to be my question,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so no stories, or, you know, they haven't yet made any announcements of expansion beyond Singapore. But I think it's just only a matter of time, right? Mm-hmm. Because
why have you got a grin on your face, Jeff? There's something you're not saying.
It's not that I know something. It's just that I'm just looking at this, right? So Amazon Prime Now in Singapore will operate out of an urban fulfillment center, a facility around 100,000 square feet. It's the company's largest Prime Now only fulfillment center in the world. Generally, it's about 30,000 square feet in the US, but in Singapore, it's 100,000 square feet. Why do you need 100,000 square feet urban fulfillment center in Singapore, where land is, you know, such
ridiculously expensive?
Yeah. It's ridiculously expensive. However, though, why would you need such a big space to fill such a small country? Clearly, you're looking at, you know, probably expanding to Malaysia, to Singapore, well, to Indonesia, because you have 100,000 square feet
center. I hope so.
But I mean, if you were a smart investor,
you would think if I just go over the border just a little bit, that 100,000 square feet would have cost me a lot less.
I think Alibaba's presence here in Malaysia, you know, it's a direct competitor. So Amazon's trying to play safe here, I guess. You know, they're just trying to enter a market that Amazon, that Alibaba doesn't really have like a strong foothold, perhaps.
Right.
This is my assumption. But I have a feeling that it's just a matter of time before we get a real competition of, you know, Alibaba and Amazon. And it's just great to see them competing here instead of, you know, in the US where we could only just watch and observe and cry. Because,
right.
you know, we will never be able to get those good deals.
I mean, it's like Christine was saying, it's incredibly frustrating that we can't legally, without jumping through hoops or through parts of the grey market, get Amazon here. You know, we have to pay, like, other people to do it and one thing to bring our stuff over here.
Yeah. So
a lot of that is because of, from what I understand, credit card fraud here in Malaysia is a massive, massive problem.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. So customers in Singapore are now given two delivery options. You can download the Amazon Prime Now app on the iPhone and also on Android. It's the 2-hour delivery service will be free, as I mentioned, for customers who order above $40. If the customers do not meet the minimum order, they can pay for a $5.99 for the 2-hour delivery option, or the $9.99 for the speedier 1-hour delivery option.
Okay.
1 hour takes me, you know, about the same time to go down to a mall and get like a cable from my smartphone and come back.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably cost more than like 10 ringgit because of my petrol and parking. And if I could do this same here, an hour within 10 ringgit for that 1 hour delivery, my
Jeff
God.
Bezos, if you're listening, please, Malaysia.
Malaysia, we have to do it, right?
We need it.
It's time for us to wrap up then, folks. Let's quickly go through the stories that we've covered today. Jeff, what did you start off with?
Yeah, so I talked about China's new quantum computing network that will sort of, you know, take the world by storm.
Because unhackable as well.
They're calling this the unhackable network communication.
I then spoke about streaming services in China, how consumers there have begun actually paying for music, dominated, of course, by one company. Yeah, they're taking over the world, I think. Tencent. We then moved on to Christine. What do you have?
I talked about KFC releasing a Bluetooth video game controller in a to-go box.
Right, and then we've had Majida with?
With Tinder for Jobs, a Sydney startup with a lot of money to expand it even more.
Yeah, that's exactly how, exactly.
And then we finished off, of course, with?
Talking about a lot of money, people, Amazon have actually now entered in Singapore.
We're just up the road, folks.
Road. Soon. So soon.
All right.
So close.
Anyway, coming up after the 1 o'clock news, it is the Breakfast Grill replay where the guest is Dr. Yu Run Zer. He's the Chief Strategy Officer for Country Garden Pacific View, Sundarian Bahad. Despite the rough headwinds and new capital controls from China that have presented one of the main challenges for Chinese real estate investment into Malaysia, Country Garden Pacific View, the group behind their much-touted forest city development in Johor, is still confident with their project. The Morning Run spoke to their chief strategy officer, Dr. Yu Run Zer, on the subject of forest city, its impact and future plans, as well as China's capital controls. Right, time for us to make a move. Of course, we will be back same time, same place tomorrow. On behalf of Jeff Sandu, Christine Wong and Majida, I'm Richard Bradbury. It is time to wrap up here on Enterprise Biz Bytes on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.